In this week's episode, I interview Angie Morgan, one of the co-authors of the book, Bet on You, How to Win with Risk. This is one of the best books on risk that I've read. And given the uncertain world we live in, I thought it was an appropriate topic for this podcast. Cue the music.
Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast, brought to you by Career Pivot. This podcast is where those of us in the second half of life come together to discuss how to repurpose our careers for the 21st century. Come listen to career experts give you proven strategies. Listen to people like you tell their stories on how they repurpose their careers. And finally, get your questions answered. Your host, Mark Miller, has made six career pivots over the last 30 years. He understands this is not about jumping out of the frying pan into a fire, but rather to create a plan where you make clear, actionable steps or pivots to a better future career. Are you ready to repurpose your career?
Welcome to episode 271 of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. My name is Mark Miller, and I'll be your host every Monday for discussion on what it's like to repurpose your career. In this week's episode, I interview Angie Morgan, one of the co-authors of the book, Bet on You, How to Win with Risk. This is one of the best books on risk I've read, and given the uncertain world we live in, I thought it was an appropriate topic for this podcast. Let me read Angie's About section from her LinkedIn profile. I learned how to lead as a United States Marine. When I transitioned to the private sector, what surprised me was how the term leadership was being used. Whereas in the Marines, leadership was a verb. Everyone aspired to lead. In my new world, leadership was a noun and only an expectation for managers. This inspired me to write my first book on leadership, Lead from the Front, as well as start my business, LeadStar. I've since written two more books, Spark and Bet on You. Through LeadStar, I do the work I love. My team and I design programs for professionals around the world that help them understand how they can express leadership in their work environments and in their lives. However, before we get the episode, let's have a word from our sponsor, Career Pivot. The Career Pivot membership community continues to help the members who are participating in this project grow and thrive. This is a community where everyone is there to help everyone else out, figure out what they want to do in the second half of life, and then make it happen. Let's hear what Greg had to say about being part of the community.
I joined the community when I was in the midst of a career transition, and what I needed was unbiased input and support and observations from folks who'd present me with their point of view that would help me figure out what I'd like to do next. And I didn't want to do it with people who lived around me or past professional colleagues. So that's where Mark and the community have been really instrumental. So I've got a built-in support network who will be genuine, honest, and supportive.
I'm recruiting new members, the next cohort. If you are interested in learning more about the endeavor, please go to careerpivot.com/community. If you feel you are risk averse, which you will hear from Angie that a lot of successful people feel they are, then this is a conversation you need to hear. Now, on to my conversation with Angie Morgan. Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast. I am really excited to have with me one of the co-authors of the book, Bet on You, How to Win with Risk. Welcome to the podcast, Angie Morgan.
Thank you for having me, Mark. It's really great to be here today.
I get pitched books all the time. And this is the first one I've seen on dealing with risk in quite a while. And so after reading through it, it really resonated. And I know my audience has to understand what risk really is and then how to deal with it. And so there was a lot of things in here. So start out with, why did you write the book?
That's a really great place to start. This is the third book I've written, and the previous ones have really been about leadership. And when you think about leadership, it's a pretty big umbrella and a lot of concepts and topics. are underneath it. And a lot of people have written about leadership. This book, though, was different in the sense that my business partner and I put our heads together and we wanted to write a book that really met our leadership coaching clients where they're at. We've had the privilege for the past nearly 20 years of coaching and developing professionals all across the globe. And we put our heads together and said, what is something unique about the conversations we have with these incredibly talented, very intelligent people? And where do we think that we can best help support them? So we started talking about trends. And what we discovered was that despite, you know, again, the intellect, the education, everything, a lot of them were risk averse. And that was actually something that we did really well, was embrace risk. We met in the Marine Corps, Courtney and I. So the physical risks inherent in military service didn't scare us, or I should say we were young and we didn't really appreciate what we were putting on the line for our country, but we're also entrepreneurs and we've taken a lot of risks. And that's something that we not only know well, but we also know that there's a lot of risk averse people, and the risks that people want to take in their life, they're not big. I mean, they're not, you know, quit your job, change your life, move to the Mediterranean. See, it's really buying a second home, starting a side hustle, writing a blog, things that shouldn't scare them, but yet had some fear associated them with within them that prevented them from pursuing.
It's kind of like being a public speaker, which is the number one feared thing for most people. And what's the worst thing you can do is you get up there and you flub around and you make a little bit of a fool of yourself, but most people actually will actually appreciate that you tried.
And what's, and you'll may think about it for days. Nobody else will. They'll forget about it. You'll beat yourself up for years, maybe, when everybody else has forgotten.
So section one, rethinking risk. And your chapter one is reimagining risk. So what do you mean by reimagining and rethinking risk?
Many people, when they hear the word risk, they think, okay, that's me going to my savings account, taking out all my money, going to the casino, betting it on red 21. And with a turn of a wheel, I can either win big or lose big. And that's not the type of risk that we're talking about. That's gambling. What we're talking about is making decisions that lead you into uncertainty. And that's really a definition of risk. And when you present it that way, people start to sit up and say, wait a second, I do this all the time. I mean, some of the biggest risks we take are getting married, having kids, going to college. I mean, some of those odds, specifically college and marriage, are 50-50. And if you think about it, if you were to tell me, Mark, hey, I'm going to jump on an airplane to Tampa and it's got a 50-50 chance of landing on the runway, I think you're crazy. I'd say, don't do that. Yet we take gambles all the time, or these types of risk all the time. And so if we coexist with risk, shouldn't we know something about it? And more importantly, how do we leverage it as a vehicle for us to, you know, be where we're at right now and get to where it is we truly want to be?
As I've looked back on my career, I've made some major career shifts that I perceived as being very risky, and they weren't. But then I've done other things, like almost 20 years ago, actually this year will be, this July will be 20 years. I hit a car head on at 50 miles an hour on a bicycle. And my wife knew this was a very dangerous route. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, what's the big deal? And it was very risky. I didn't perceive it. Now, obviously, I lived.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny that you say that. You know, sometimes we don't think about the inherent risk in our life, getting in our car, for example, riding a bicycle on a street, but oh no, ask your boss for a promotion and you're dead in the tracks. And so we sort of have to open it up a bit. What is true risk? It's just that decision that leads you into uncertainty, and you can risk for your values, your finances, your career, your safety. There's all these areas in our life where we can enact risk. And being thoughtful about it. I heard from somebody the other day that it seems sort of oxymoronic regarding thoughtful risk, but it really is. Like, it's got to start somewhere. And probably for the career risks that you've taken, it's because you were bought in mentally. You'd engaged your mind that these were part of your intentions and aspirations. So it wasn't just like 90 Day Fiancé, where you're going to do something wild and outlandish. It really was a reflection of your true intentions, which means you're thinking about it. And you made the decision that put you on the path.
Well, you have some great stories in the book. One of them is the Reese Witherspoon story of where she actually started, she grabbed control. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
That was one of the best parts about writing this book, was featuring stories of not just Courtney and myself and our leadership journey and the choices that we've made, but some of these well-known celebrities and some lesser known people who are just really important to us in our life. We think about Reese Witherspoon. Her early career was quite successful, Legally Blonde being one of her biggest career successes. And by the time she was in her 40s, it was reported in the New York Times that she was a washed up actress, essentially. And that didn't stop her, though. I mean, if you can imagine, for anybody in their 40s hearing that, that must have been really devastating. She used that moment to reimagine the game she was in. Her husband said, "Hey, you like books." So she started reading more books, buying rights to books, and developing, you know, movies and television series based on her interests. And she built a company. She sold a company for, I'll say the very financial term, gobs of money. It was a lot of money. But again, she was able to choose then, so not be at the mercy of external circumstances, really be intentional about how she could direct her career and really the career of other predominantly women and minorities that she felt were often underrepresented in media.
In chapter two really spoke to me. If not you, then who?
Ordinary people do extraordinary things all the time. We tend to think about people and their successes based on who they are now, but not necessarily who they were then when they were making, you know, decisions about their life. And so we talk about like Steve Jobs or Sarah Blakely, you know, these big famous people. They at one point were probably, well, we don't know, but let's just assume for a second that they were uncertain too. And there were days when they didn't feel inspired or invigorated by the risks that they were taking, yet they persevered. So the secret formula for success is really, you know, having a clear vision, you know, embracing your dreams, enacting risk and making decisions and stumbling along the way. No path to success is paved smoothly, and having a plan for when you do stumble so you can get back on the path. And just really being open to the journey where it takes you.
Like, I'm looking at the section, building self-confidence. Which comes first, experience or self-confidence, or self-confidence builds experience?
This is always the question, right? The chicken or the egg. What do you need in order to get on that path? Oftentimes, and I don't have the answer to that question. So do you need confidence to give you experience or experience to give you confidence? I would say build your confidence and acquire experiences. And if you can't get firsthand experience, seek out secondhand experiences. Talk to people who are doing the things that you want to do. They're going to be your greatest source of guidance and wisdom, because we can only do so much. And so if you're considering a career transition, talk to somebody who successfully navigated their career. If you need a mentor or guide, ask people who, in your network, how to acquire such, you know, experts to help guide you. If you want to buy a vacation rental property for secondary income, there are tons of people doing it. Talk to them. They'll give you their best practices. And here's the tricky thing, or here's the funny thing. When you go to people and ask them for guidance, you think it's such a big thing, but people love to help. People love to give advice.
Well, by the way, I have an acronym called asking for air. You ask for advice, insights, and recommendations.
Oh, I love that.
When you ask for advice, it's a compliment.
Mm-hmm.
And people will rarely turn you down. And the other, to go back to your first point, was I like to say, go find people who look, taste, and smell like you.
Mm-hmm.
People who have your background, your experience, maybe your demographic, who are doing now the thing that you want to go do.
Exactly. Because they figured out some things that you've got yet to figure out. So you're not that far behind them. And there's such wonderful humility with asking and having that open mind on the journey just to take guidance, because other people are often our greatest source of inspiration and wisdom for the experiences that we lack.
So your section two is defining success and doing the work. So like you say, dream it, own it, take it. Tell us about that.
So dreams are interesting because we don't, I think, spend enough time really self-authoring our own dreams. The external world will tell us plenty of what we should be doing, what we could be doing, what we're really good at. And it's great to take guidance again from other people, but the best dreams start within. So having a clarified vision is really important when you start to think about the dreams you want to enact for yourself. But the most important thing is actually doing the work. And we say in the book, and hopefully I can say in your podcast, don't half-ass it either. If this is really something you want to do, do the research, do experiments, dabble before you commit, and then get to a point where we'll say it's a choice point that you can actually make a decision about the viability of the option. I'll give you an example. I've got a coaching client who makes just wonderful homeware, sells it on Etsy. And she does it on the side with the limited time she has. She's got a, you know, couple young kids at home. And so it is really time, but she was using some of the practices that we talk about in Bet on You. She's creating white space in her life. You know, she'll put on a Disney movie for her kids so she can build her business. And she's trying out new products and she's trying out new marketing and she's getting, you know, really great success. So she's getting her business idea to a place where if she wanted to commit full time, she'd have the confidence to really invest in it full time. So I think if sometimes people half-ass things like, I want to be a realtor, I'm not going to study for the test, but I'll take the test. And if I fail, well, it wasn't meant to be. Well, that's not a very fair conclusion. You didn't prepare. You failed. Duh. You know, I've got young kids. That happens all the time. You're just like, yeah, well, that wasn't an invalid conclusion about your strength in an area.
You mentioned several times in the book, particularly around dreams, and you talk about a kaleidoscope. Why the kaleidoscope?
Yeah. So when we think about enacting risks, I think the obvious thing for most people, professionals, is they start thinking about their career. And while that is important, we also know that during the pandemic, a lot of people thought about their lives more holistically than that. They spent more time with their families, less time with their friends. So they may have had some interests and desires to do more things with friends and discover some more joy. So we are advocating enacting risk in areas of your life, not just work. And we like to think about it as a kaleidoscope is a great metaphor. What makes a kaleidoscope beautiful is the multiple chambers, equally balanced chips in each chamber. So we say, think about your career, think about your life, and by life, think about family, think about your interests that you have. Think about too, another chamber is risking for impact. So service, a lot of people find great joy, myself included, from volunteering in my community. And a lot of people haven't in the past couple of years. That could be an area of your life where it's been in neglect and it really could add value to you. And finally, what are you doing for fun, for joy? You know, I was working with a group of oil and gas executives this week. And we were talking after the session just about like, if you can't have fun in your life, it's really hard to answer the question, work, why am I doing this?
I don't know whether it was you or Courtney's story about listening to your child in the back seat and when he was talking about his mom, he said, well, she works all the time.
Yeah. And that was a really big wake up call because again, my son's talking to his friend. Oh, I don't think my mom does anything. She just works all the time. And I was really kind of offended. But then I did my little self audit and I say, you know, I can see why he would think that. And then I tried to think about the things I did for fun. And I realized it's not fun for me going to Marvel movies and taking your friends to, you know, play paintball isn't fun for me. I can guarantee you that's not what I would do with my spare time. And it was a really great reflection point to say, you know, maybe there is some fun that's been missing in my life. And so that night I made a point to call my friends to arrange some cocktail parties and then also just going live music. Now that we're back into the live music space, it's got such a wonderful just way to collectively fill so many souls and spirits.
And you have a section, Own Your Actions. And I had Michael Clinton, who wrote the book Roar, on the podcast late last year. And he was one of them who says ownership of your past, your plans, you got to own it. So talk to me what you mean by own your actions.
Nobody else is going to treat your dreams the priority that you should treat your dreams. And so if you wait for the stars, moon, and sun to align, you're going to miss out on a lot of opportunity. Start today. Why not today? Tomorrow isn't a guarantee. And if something is missing from your life and it's really that important from you, don't hold back. And you have to own it. Don't give it for your spouse to do or wait for your kids to, you know, prove your wishes and dreams. They won't. They're saboteurs of the organization. Do the things that are most important to you now. And maybe your kids are out of school. What are you waiting for? You know, maybe they're young, you know, adults on their own. This is a great time just to embrace the things. And I will say this, the things that you are afraid to do. And that fear thing is really important, because if you weren't afraid, you'd probably already be doing it.
I had a best man at my wedding was probably 20 years older than me. And whenever I would say, oh yeah, I'm going to go do this. And he would go, oh, how about Tuesday? Rather than say, yeah, I'm going to do it. Can't be done by Thursday.
I love it. That's again, dream it, put a deadline on it. Let's go.
Forcing me to pin myself down. Mm-hmm. Because when we have fear, many of us, I know I do, I procrastinate.
Yeah, it's a very, again, tomorrow, the next day, or there's a lot of people out there who are perfectionists and the timing will never be right. I've heard people who want to start families. The timing is never right. The career is never in the right position. It's always too busy. That's been the interesting thing about coaching so many, you know, leaders in the past several years. There's never a downtime in a busy person's schedule. There's never a, when things slow down, I'm going to blank. You have to make it a priority or it's just not going to happen. And we like in the book, I don't know, I can't remember if this made this, I think I was fighting for it. You know, the things that are important to you, your priorities, they don't need deadlines. They don't need calendar appointments. You just make them happen. Like my kids are a priority to me. Working out is a priority to me. It doesn't get a space on my Outlook calendar. It just happens. So treat your dreams with that level of intention and dare I say intensity. You don't need to calendar it, just start small. And that's what the biggest thing about risk, again, it's not rip the Band-Aid off and just jump 2 feet in the next day. It's start small, build momentum. That's how sustainable change happens.
Again, I had Diane Wu David, who wrote the book Future Proof on the podcast last year. And one of the things she talked about that I really liked was experimenting in your career. ID, do small side projects to see whether you even like doing it. I like to say most of us suffer from what I call MSU disorder. That's MSU stands for make stuff up.
I love it. Yeah.
Right. When we have a void in our knowledge, we make stuff up.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Right. And yeah. And she talked about just go try things, low risk projects. And the more you do them, the more you realize, well, I can go do this.
And that's what we wrote about too, is that try and get such that bad rap. And I blame Yoda, if I can blame Yoda, you know, do or do not, there is no try. No, there's try. You know, the weight of the universe's survival is not on our shoulder. Sure, if that's a situation, commit, wholehearted agree. But for most stuff, try something, try yep. anything, start somewhere.
Yes. So in your chapter 4, you talk about choose your guides and you talk about 3 different kinds of guides.
Yeah. So we wanted to first and foremost talk about that everyone needs someone to help accelerate in advance. There are 3 types of people in our life. I think the first and foremost are champions. And I don't call them mentors, but really like people who exist, who we can go to, who we talked earlier about, who can give us guidance, perspective, airtime to help us reimagine our future and create the next steps towards our path. We need those people and they're there. We just have to go find them and ask them. The second are big stagers, probably people like you, people who have an audience, people who are advocating, you know, about the ideas and the interests that you have. We may not know them, but they built this really great community and source of inspiration that we can tap into. We need that in our life. Because sometimes when we're enacting risk at this stage of our life, it's more an expression of our preferences. And maybe the community is a little smaller, like married. Most people do get married. So we have, you know, a lot of people to plan weddings with. But at this stage of our career, our goals and risks that we want to take are a little bit more nuanced based on our personal preferences. So having that community is really important. The final piece is no choosers. And these are often family members, people close to us in our community who we haven't had a hand in selecting, but definitely have an opinion or say about the risks that we want to take. We have to be very, very selective on how they influence our very important opinion of ourselves, because not only will that kill our confidence, but it might make us step away from the risk that we want to take. And our guidance is that these are relationships definitely that need to be managed. And you may, if it's a spouse, maybe your spouse isn't as supportive of a career change you want to make, or a retirement, you know, advisor that you want to switch to. There may be some negotiation. So don't water down your dreams and aspirations. Work through them. And the people who love you, and they are there, they exist, they will likely support you. They may not agree with you, but they may support you in the long run.
Yeah. It's interesting. In fact, I just did a session this morning with a woman who's about my age, and she, as she went through her career, she kept on doing things based on what others wanted her to do, including her mother, versus following her passion.
Mm-hmm.
And so she ended up working for one of the big technology companies for years and years and years, rather than following her passion, which is yoga and spirituality. And I claim I grew up with a mother who I still have programs from my mother that are still running in my brain, and I turned 66 soon, that you have to learn to kind of turn off if they don't serve you.
Yeah.
In one of my favorite books is Necessary Endings by Dr. Henry Cloud. He talks about the fact that in order for new things to begin, we often have to end old things. And sometimes it's ending relationships or putting boundaries on relationships because they don't serve you.
And it's so hard in those moments to trust yourself that that is the necessity or the necessary action that has to happen in order to progress. But it is the way of life. Change is the way of life, and we have to believe it because it's what's got us here to this point to be able to have these opportunities and dreams.
Yeah, I'm now glancing through the chapter, Do the Work. And I really like the story of Dolly Parton.
I love that story. Yeah, that was a gem that we uncovered. Part of doing the work is being able to say no and finding the time to pursue your dreams. And we often call it a really gutsy no, because inevitably you're going to let somebody down. No, I can't volunteer. No, I'm not going to do this. No, I'm going to outsource this so I can find the time, and being clear on your priorities. One of the gutsiest no's that we heard of was Dolly Parton during the initial success of her song that she wrote, I Will Always Love You. She was approached by Elvis Presley's manager to see if Elvis could in fact record the song. And traditionally when Elvis records songs, he likes the recording rights associated with that. And Dolly thought about it, and she came back and said, no, this is my song. He can sing it, but he can't have the recording rights to it. It was a gutsy no. She turned down a lot of money. And think about that song too. At the time, it could have been tremendously mutually beneficial for she and Elvis. She did all this without knowing that many years later, The Bodyguard would come out, Whitney Houston would sing her song, wouldn't ask for recording rights. And she's quoted as saying that I made enough money from Whitney's version that I could buy Graceland. But talk about just, again, tremendous conviction to your priorities and values. This wasn't Dolly Parton as we know her now. This was Dolly Parton then, which I imagine was scared, uncertain, and took a big risk.
Two other sections that I really liked. One is work in the margin, and the other one was don't half-ass it either.
Yeah, if you're going to find the time to dabble in your dreams and see if they're viable, first off, find your margin, that white space in your life. It's 2 hours on Saturday. Maybe this is where you negotiate with your partner. Maybe it's, you know, a couple nights a week when it just has to be. Maybe it's early mornings when it's your power hour while you're drinking coffee and plugging away at your ambition. And when you're in that space, if you've carved it out, use that space and don't half-ass it. Don't fold laundry or multitask and think you're going to be making progress. Really just use that time to do that thing, to see again where you can take it. It's that space for experimentation that you just talked about.
Section 3 is where your book stands out.
And that is staying safe and recognizing wins. And the fact is, with risk, you got to protect yourself.
Yeah.
Right? So your chapter 6 is weave your safety net.
We wrote that just to remind people. We're not saying if you have no savings, you know, go off the grid and build your life and take these crazy financial risks. We're saying that there are things that you need to have to be safe. The three elements we talk about are your finance, your talent, and your judgment, with the emphasis on your talent being the strongest element of your safety net. I have a friend who is an executive director at a nonprofit, and she wanted to transition careers into being more of an independent consultant. And she had an easier time imagining herself homeless on the streets of Chicago as a drug addict than she did actually doubling her salary within 3 years' time. And I kept asking her, okay, so that's really obviously crazy how you're catastrophizing the cost of failure. But more importantly, don't you think your talent's going to catch you at some point? Don't you think you're going to, you know, before you're homeless on the streets of Chicago, be able to bounce back with the talent that you've been building out throughout your whole career? And I think that's something that we all need to remember. You know, our employer isn't going to save us. It's your hard work that keeps you secure. The government, as we know, will not save you. You know, they may make it a little bit easier to, you know, live below the poverty line, but it's not going to save you. You save you, which is why risk is a muscle that has to be being built perpetually. So we can be as strong as we possibly can when the time comes when we're going to have to make a pivot. And I think that's where a lot of people are right now as they contemplate career change, coming out of retirement because of, you know, the inflation, where the stock market is today. It is a scary world. It is a very uncertain world. And the only thing that you need to be relying on is the fact that amidst uncertainty, you've got you. And of course, you have a little bit of retirement. You don't have to overinflate what you need to feel safe. You also have your judgment. You've survived 100% of your past bad days. You're going to get through this time too. So just reminding yourself that that gut feeling you have, your talent, your finances will see you through.
When I read about the people, women worrying about becoming bag ladies, I've probably had 6 or 8 clients who were all very successful women in their 50s and 60s who all feared that they would be bag ladies.
Isn't that nuts?
And it's not logical, but that was a underlying fear. Now, they were all single, and the fact that they all had they were the only ones that they could rely on, versus, you know, many of us who have spouses and other significant others, where, you know, you're not doing it on your own, or you have this perceived, notice I say perceived, safety.
So yeah, it's funny. I write about this in the book about going through the process of a divorce, that right. I, you know, found myself single, found myself had to rely upon my career as an independent consultant and feeling very insecure. And it was a very irrational. Anybody who's been through a divorce understands that illogical and irrational is part of the process because you're going through massive life change and upheaval, but just having to come back, wait a second, I have been earning on my own for 15 years. I've got this history to build off of. It's going to be okay. It's a process, though, to get yourself back to a position of saying, I'm good. I can do this. I've done these things before.
Well, very often looking at ourselves, I was helping a woman here who had moved to Mexico, and she was on a pretty tight budget. Mm-hmm. And she was just trying to reach 62 so she could start drawing Social Security. And I told her, you're going to be okay. It's not going to be easy, but you're going to be okay. She came back 6 months ago and said, you know what? You are right. But she couldn't see that.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so important. It's like everybody else can say it, but until you start believing it, the change that you're seeking to achieve isn't going to be realized.
Yep. So how do we build up that risk muscle? What can I do?
Small things every day. small things every day. So maybe thinking about in a career, you know, negotiating hours or flexibility with your employer, negotiating salary, coming back into the workforce, one small thing. I love Atomic Habits. I think James Clear's work is great, but if you can, you know, be 1% better every single day, you're building momentum for a better life. So what's the small thing? So maybe start reaching out to one person, getting on LinkedIn, which may for some people be an intimidating proposition to actually start building their connections. Maybe their connections have been a little stale in the past and they need to really consider getting back into the networking game. So reach out to one person, start your resume. Maybe the best thing you can do today is get a template for your resume. And then the next day, give yourself a small goal. Maybe it's, you know, if you found yourself in a career where you're not feeling like you have a lot of opportunity, or maybe you're holding back your opinion, maybe it's trying to assert yourself in a meeting. One small thing goes to another small thing. And pretty soon you'll start to feel strong. And we write too in the book about fear and failure. Like, just because you're doing these one small things doesn't mean that everything is going to be perfect. It's ever going to go the way as planned. Then have a plan for failures. Like if you, you know, speak up and it's awkward, or maybe your voice is met with crickets, don't beat yourself up. Nobody cares. You care. Let it go.
Yeah, it's interesting. We had I run a mastermind group with mostly with career changers. And last week we had, you know, several people saying, well, I'm going to ask for, like, they want me to come into the office 3 days a week, but I'm not doing that. I may come in once a week. And suddenly he finds out that this is a law firm that they've already lost three lawyers because they all said, I'm going someplace else so I can work remote. Mm-hmm. And he asked, and they said, fine.
Their time's the charm.
Well, the fact is, you don't know what their response will be until you go ask.
Mm-hmm.
And talking to others on how to make the ask is really helpful. How do I approach this? There are probably many ways to approach it.
Yeah. And I think having that mastermind group is something that we underestimate. Just getting a variety of different perspectives can be the trick that you need to be able to influence your perspective and give you the confidence and courage to actually do the thing that you want to do.
Well, you also see people, I think you talk about in the one section about the fact having people, you can go, wow, you did what? You can do that? People, when you see other people who have done it, it suddenly becomes, oh, that's achievable. When I read the section on guides, that's the one thing I thought about. I've had several people, I had the podcast several weeks ago, Debbie Schnurr, who went from being a mechanical engineer to being a master gardener. And she's been so good at connecting dots. And that she's been such an inspiration to others going, oh, you can do that? Oh, and it's having those guides, I think, is real important.
It can be done. Why not you?
That's right. So this has been great. Angie, if someone wanted to reach out and talk to you, or more importantly, they want to buy the book, because the important stuff.
The big stuff, yeah.
How can they do that?
Thank you for the opportunity. First and foremost, if you want to stay connected, I publish a lot on LinkedIn. So if you go to Angie Judge Morgan, you can find some of my work there. If you're looking for the book, it should be available anywhere books are sold. And finally, if you want to learn more, just subscribe to LeadStar's website. That's my company, leadstar.us.
And we'll have links to all that in the show notes.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, as I said, I loved your book. I love the fact that, you know, as I read through it, so much of it resonated with me about just simply the need to take risks, but take it in manageable bite-sized chunks.
Exactly. It's the small things lead to big things every single time.
So thank you very much for being on the Repurpose Your Career podcast.
I appreciate it. Thank you for hosting me.
Hope you enjoyed that episode and are now willing to start building that risk muscle. Take a moment, go to careerpivot.com, sign up for the weekly Career Pivot Insights newsletter, which is sent out every Sunday. You'll get a weekly update on this podcast, white papers, and new blog posts. While there, do not forget to check out the Career Pivot community, which can be found at careerpivot.com/community. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Look for Career Pivot on Facebook and LinkedIn. You'll also find me on Twitter at Career Pivot. Thank you for listening all the way to the end of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. You will find all the show notes at careerpivot.com/episode-271. Also, do not forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Podbeam, Overcast, Spotify, Pandora, Amazon Music, and lots of other places where podcasts can be found. In fact, this podcast can be found on the Repurpose Your Career podcast channel on YouTube. Hope to see you next Monday for another episode of Repurpose Your Career podcast.